This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. It shouldn't surprise us that Donald Trump's top counselor, Kellyanne Conway, sitting with the White House logo behind her, decided to give her boss's daughter a, quote, free commercial to boost her lagging business. After all, Conway and Trump's cabinet members as a whole are sorely lacking in both real-world government experience and ethical standards. Trump himself took the time away from running a country of some 300 million people to whine about how unfairly Nordstrom had treated his daughter. But it's more than just Ivanka Trump's business that has blurred the lines between government and commerce under Trump. The Trump Organization's sprawling set of international businesses and properties spanning the globe are effectively unavoidable ethics traps. No Republican would have tolerated even a whiff of similar possible violations from a liberal politician. My guest is Paul Seamus Ryan. He is the Vice President of Policy and Litigation at Common Cause. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, we have had many assurances from Trump when pushed and pushed before he was inaugurated that he would separate himself from his business interests when he was president. There was talk of a so-called blind trust. None of that, as far as I understand, has happened, has it?
That's correct. President Trump has not separated himself from his business. It's a major conflict of interest problem.
So he basically, is this sort of unprecedented in terms of presidents having this level of business interest the globe over? I mean, have we ever seen this as a country, having somebody occupy this top position in the White House and have all of these interests?
No one ever before in the history of this nation, no president has had this extensive of private business holdings, both domestic and international. And presidents going back decades have put all of their financial holdings into a truly blind trust. President Trump simply refused to do that. There's nothing blind about his arrangement, his business. He retains ownership of his business today, and it's being run by two of his sons. So unprecedented problem going on here.
And even if he had actually kept his promise to put his business holdings in a blind trust, would that have even been enough, given that it's members of his own family who would be running it?
Well, the step one of creating the blind trust would have been selling the business and then putting money into a trust that he had no control over. So, I think that's what we are calling for, the creation of a truly blind trust, meaning divest, sell out ownership in the Trump Organization, and then put whatever money he received from selling the assets into a blind trust that was managed by an independent trustee. That would have been enough, but we have nothing like that today. We have neither blindness in terms of the trust, nor do we have independent management of the trust.
Now, the issue of Ivanka Trump's businesses has brought these ethical problems to the surface. But is that actually truly related to the fact that our president is a businessman? I mean, she has her own set of businesses. He has decided to promote her and put down the companies that dropped her line, and then his own counselor has given her a free commercial. Later, Kellyanne Conway was apparently schooled about the fact that such things are violation, as if she didn't know. But are the issues with Ivanka Trump relevant to the actual discussion?
They're definitely relevant. You know, in my view, in the view of Common Cause, what we're seeing now at the White House is trickle-down unethical behavior. We have a president who was not required by law to separate himself from his business, but nevertheless, ethical norms strongly counsel against doing so. He refused to follow those longstanding ethical norms. He is arguably in violation today of a provision of the Constitution called the Emoluments Clause that prohibits a president from receiving any payments from foreign governments. His maintained ownership of his businesses arguably violates that provision of the Constitution. And now we're seeing others within his administration following his leadership or lack of leadership when it comes to ethics and engaging in questionable or in some cases downright impermissible unethical behavior. Kellyanne Conway is the most recent example. She violated a clearly established ethics rule by promoting a private company while on the clock as a member of the administration from the White House press briefing room. The president's singling out of Nordstrom is another troubling example. Is it illegal? No, but it's troubling when the president is singling out particular businesses for praise or for condemnation, and even more troubling when he's doing it for the financial benefit of one of his children. This is all one big unethical web of problems.
I mean, when Hillary Clinton was running, the Clinton Foundation's dealings were seen as hugely problematic by Republicans and actually even some progressives. I mean, I thought they were quite problematic as well, that you saw the Clinton Foundation basically getting donations from heads of state or family members of heads of state, and those could easily be seen as influencing a sitting secretary of state and possibly a future sitting president. Those were, I think, actually valid criticisms. And now those same people seem to have blinded themselves to far worse and more direct violations of ethical lines.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sonali. Common Cause years ago called on a full audit of the Clinton Foundation. We wanted to see the foundation's books opened up so that we could examine and determine as members of the public whether or not there were conflicts of interest there. We're calling on the same thing for President Trump. We think the Trump Organization's books need to be opened up. We need a full audit of the Trump Organization so that the public can scrutinize whether or not President Trump and his staff are acting in the best interests of American people, or instead are acting in the best interest of the Trump Organization and their own bank accounts. We need, at the very least, transparency today, given that the president has been completely unwilling to separate himself from the business.
He hasn't even released his tax returns, as most, I think all presidents in the last 40 years or something to that effect have released his tax returns. So the public doesn't even really have a full sense of the extent of his financial holdings and the tax payments that he's made, right?
That's absolutely correct. All that we know really are what we've learned from two financial disclosure forms that President Trump filed as a candidate. These are standard. All candidates running for federal office file these forms. All of his competitors for the office of president file these forms. What those forms tell us is that President Trump owns or has a had a position as an officer in more than 500 companies. We know very little about what those companies do. Many of those companies are innocuously sounding named LLCs that provide us no information about what business sector they're involved in. And many of those LLCs in turn own other sub-companies, sub-LLCs. So we don't know what we don't know, but we suspect that there are major, major conflicts of interest happening right now.
So let's talk about what Common Cause has attempted to do. You've reached out to Jason Chaffetz, who's a Republican from Utah, because he heads up an ethics committee?
That's correct. We've been calling on Representative Chaffetz to do his job, to run the House Oversight Committee on a truly nonpartisan or bipartisan might be a more accurate description of it, basis, and to oversee this White House the same way that he undoubtedly would have overseen a Clinton White House had she won the presidency, and in the manner that he has dogged the Obama administration for years. So he needs to be doing his job. He needs to be scrutinizing President Trump. He needs to be holding hearings. He needs to be demanding tax returns from the president. His committee has some power. They need to be using it for the interests of the American people.
Now, I understand that he did actually question Kellyanne Conway's endorsement of Ivanka Trump's business.
He did. We took that as a positive sign. In fact, I've applauded that. It's a no-brainer, really. I mean, Kellyanne Conway violated a clear and well-established ethics rule, and Representative Chaffetz recognized that and acknowledged that much, but he needs to go a lot further. He needs to dig into this iceberg, because Kellyanne Conway's remarks last week are just the tip of the iceberg.
So let's talk about the emoluments clause, which you mentioned earlier. I mean, this might sound like a little bit of a technical issue that we should really unravel for the public. So basically, one of the ways in which that clause could be violated is if heads of state, when they are in the United States on business to meet President Trump, if they stay at his hotel in Washington, D.C., the Trump Hotel, Washington, D.C., essentially they would be putting money directly into the president's pockets.
That's correct. And that, in my view, is one of the things that is prohibited by the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution. It prohibits receipt of any payments. There's some dispute among lawyers whether it means a fair market, whether it encompasses a fair market value transaction. As someone staying in a Trump hotel pays the same rate any of us would pay. My view, I think the best reading of the Emoluments Clause is that, yes, it would indeed cover that type of payment. It doesn't have to be some sort of gift or extraordinary payment beyond fair market value. Any money going from a foreign government into the pocket of the president via the Trump Organization violates the Constitution, in my view. But that hotel example, I'm thinking, is really a pretty minor example. It's one that's quite visible and attractive to talk about. But the Trump Organization does business all over the world, including with companies owned in whole or in part by foreign governments. So the violations could be in the tens of millions of dollars or more, not just a foreign diplomat staying in Trump's hotel down the street here from my office. I think it's a much bigger problem than that.
So let's just, again, spell it out. If there is somebody in another country that has before their government whether or not to permit, you know, a golf course that Trump wants to build, also has a diplomatic meeting coming up with the United States on some political issue, that head of state knows that they could either use Trump's business interest to bargain with the U.S., or they could have leverage over the U.S., or they could be leveraged by the Trump administration using his business interest. I mean, it seems to be any number of very problematic issues that could end up influencing our, say, foreign policy in the interest of serving Trump's personal bottom line.
I agree completely. The way that these conflicts can play out can go a variety of different ways in the ways that you've just described. I'll give you another example, a concrete example, Deutsche Bank. The Trump Organization and President Trump would not have been able to engage in much of its development in recent years without the support of Deutsche Bank, which has loaned the Trump Organization tens of millions of dollars. Well, now President Trump is in charge of the Department of Justice, and the Department of Justice is investigating Deutsche Bank for illegal activity, allegedly illegal activity here in the United States that led or contributed at least to the mortgage crisis and the housing bubble. How is the president going to enforce the law against one of his closest business partners and allies that have made the Trump Organization's workings possible? It's very reasonable for members of the public to doubt whether or not the president could do so from an arm's length in a really sort of fair and balanced manner when we're talking about enforcing the law against his good business buddies.
You know, his defenders might say, well, the president has pledged to not let his business impact his decision making as president. But I mean, are we supposed to take his word for it? Because there's so little information available to the public that is there even a way for us to determine whether he is keeping these promises?
On your last point, no, we don't have the transparency we need in order to verify that he is keeping these promises. So even to the extent one is inclined to trust, you need to follow up trust with verification. We have no way to do the verification. But President Trump's own actions suggest that he is incapable of separating himself and his personal financial interests from how he's going to run the government. His tweets against a private company for dropping his daughter's product line suggest that he is vindictive and he is impulsive, and that he acts defensively around his businesses, and he just hasn't shown the capacity up to now to put aside his business interests, his family interests, for the sake of the American people. We just haven't seen.
I understand that there's some lawsuits. I know that the Committee for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington Crew has filed at least one, maybe two lawsuits. As far as you know, what sort of legal challenges are there? I mean, short of asking a Republican, as your organization has done, to investigate a fellow Republican, asking Representative Jason Chaffetz to investigate Trump, are there legal ways to hold the Trump administration accountable for these ethical violations?
One of the biggest challenges to bringing legal action in court to try to deal with these Trump conflicts is the legal doctrine of standing. You need to be injured in order to get through the courthouse doors and have a court hear your case. And that's going to be perhaps one of the challenges that Crew is going to face in its litigation. And I'm a big fan of Crew. I work closely with them. And I wish them the best in that lawsuit. They may have a hard time meeting this standing requirement, but where we might see even greater promise for lawsuits to deal with these conflicts are when the Trump Organization's own business competitors get the short end of the stick as a result of some action that President Trump takes as president. They very well might have standing to walk into court and say, this is crazy. We can't have a president conducting public business, governmental business, to benefit his own private business interest at our expense. That's where we might see some interesting legal challenges in the months and years ahead.
I mean, what about the meeting that Trump just had with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe at his Mar-a-Lago resort? He is going to host him at that resort, or has hosted him at that resort. Presumably, the government is getting billed for some of that. Also, I understand that the Department of Defense or Secret Service in offering security, or basically being obliged to do security work for him and or his wife while he is at his penthouse in New York, have essentially been staying at his hotels and paying rent to his family. Aren't those already violations that could be challenged?
Well, I'll tell you that Prime Minister Abe's visit to Mar-a-Lago presents a really interesting, or it illustrates the bind that the president's in. If the Japanese government had paid for that stay, then it would have been a violation of the Emoluments Clause. Instead, President Trump said that he would personally pay, he would treat at no expense, or at the expense of the Trump Organization, which owns Mar-a-Lago, treat the prime minister to his visit to avoid Emoluments Clause violation. But that raises this other specter of impropriety that, you know, who knows what types of influences may come to bear on President Trump's public decisions, his governmental decisions, as a result of these sort of interactions between foreign government employees and his own private businesses. But you touched on one really, really troubling aspect of all of this, which is that millions and millions of taxpayer dollars are going to end up in President Trump's pocket in the form of all of these costs around Secret Service, State Department officials staying at Trump-owned properties, being, you know, and being paid, their stay is being paid for by American taxpayers. All that money is going to end up in the president's pocket. That's quite troubling.
And we know that the security that Melania Trump and her son require costs the city of New York millions of dollars constantly. And that's something that New Yorkers are pretty upset about. I mean, that's a state tax dollars, it sounds pretty problematic that as well.
Yeah, I mean, we have a long history and I think it's good public policy to provide safety for the first family. But here, because President Trump owns these businesses, and these businesses are where much of the presidential detail is staying and security for the Trump family, that's where things get tricky and more troubling, because President Trump himself is going to personally profit from these taxpayer dollars, providing what otherwise look like pretty reasonable expenses around security, et cetera. But the problem here is his unwillingness, the president's unwillingness to separate himself from his businesses and the resulting profit that he will make through his presidency.
And we know from Trump's background, from the fact that he's been a businessman all of his or most of his adult life, that he values his companies, his money, his billions, much more than he values government service. So if he had to choose between the two, if someone forced him to choose between the two, I imagine he might resign rather than actually really personally divesting himself from his businesses. I can't see him valuing the service to the country more than his own business.
If indeed, and he has told us, he has shown us that he is unwilling to divest from his business, but the time to make that decision would have been before running for president and winning the office of presidency. If he did not want to divest from his private business holdings, he shouldn't have run for president. Mm-hmm. You know, because now we're stuck in this.
Of course, I think he just didn't even expect to win.
I don't know about that. I mean, I won't venture a guess, but the one thing we haven't touched on yet, but it relates directly to his attitude, his wife's attitude towards the presidency, perhaps his children's attitude. Some paperwork filed by Melania Trump's lawyers in a lawsuit last week, a defamation lawsuit against a news organization, suggests that, or it went further than suggested, explicitly stated that Melania Trump views her time in the White House as the First Lady as a once-in-a-lifetime marketing opportunity. She expected to make big bucks serving as First Lady through marketing of her own goods and various lines of products. She's now claiming damages that some reporting, false reporting that she engaged in sex work years ago, damaged this once-in-a-lifetime marketing opportunity. The fact that that's her attitude, though, and I think it's probably an attitude held by the president and his other children, that this is a marketing opportunity here, serving what is supposed to be a public service endeavor. And that's really troubling, and it's also really telling about this family.
Well, Paul, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find out more online about the work that Common Cause does?
CommonCause.org. We'd love for you to visit our website and check us out.
We'll post a link to it from our site later today. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Paul Seamus Ryan, Vice President of Policy and Litigation at Common Cause. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.